Welcome to Nerds at Church, a queer feminist podcast diving deep into faith, nerdery, and the Bible. I'm Pastor Kay, and I use pronouns like she and her.
And I'm Pastor Emily, and my pronouns are they, them, theirs. In this episode, we'll discuss books. It's our book talk episode, where we talk about the book list for this season and recap the amazingness that it has been.
Check out the episode description for links to any references we make in this episode. There are going to be so many references.
So many. But we'll also link directly to our bookshop book list, so you can get the summary of them all there as well. But yes, so many links. It's going to be great. So as we mentioned, it is our book talk episode, so we're just going to kind of stroll through our episodes for this season and refresh our memories on what they were and some books that either we brought up during them or that work with those themes. And we did our best to include some kids' books in all of these, so you get kind of a range of the, like, super heady academic and also so accessible a kid could read it kind of options. Yeah. So our first episode was on cosmology, and we had a lot of fun digging into cosmology.
Which is?
The way we understand the universe, the way we make sense of the universe and our place in it. There's a lot of mythologies that go into that from every religion and every culture. And there's also, like, scientific cosmology. We were focusing more on the cultural and religious cosmologies, like Genesis.
Shocking for a podcast about the Bible and such, but yes.
Weird.
So first, we have some adult books on cosmology. One that I think actually did come up in the episode is called Process and Reality, an Essay in Cosmology by Alfred North Whitehead. Now, Alfred North Whitehead is a religion and philosophy author, so strangely enough, this is basically cosmology for philosophers and theologians. It's a classic text, and it's a really interesting look at the philosophical side of cosmology, and is well beloved by actually a bunch of different people I know, particularly if you're into process theology. That is kind of the standard that you start with.
Shout out to River Cook Needham, our guest who dug into process theology and the Book of Jonah with us in our first season.
Yeah. And then I went and looked for some introductory texts on the scientific side of cosmology for those who would like to take a look at that. And three that I found that got very good reviews and seemed to be very popular. The first is called Introduction to Cosmology by Barbara Ryden. That is an introduction text for the science side, and this is sort of at the advanced undergrad level. So you don't have to understand general relativity yet, actually, is kind of how it was explained to me, what level you have to be at to, yeah, because goodness knows that requires a whole new level of dedication.
I love that that's our barometer. You don't have to understand general relativity yet, but this might make you want to.
Exactly. Maybe. Actually, that's kind of, the intro to the book was sort of, that's the level that you need to be at. And then there's also another book called Cosmology. These are all very creative titles. And this one is by Steven Weinberg. And this is an overview of the science, specifically designed for science majors or folks who are willing to do some extra work. So this is a little higher level than the previous book.
So you might want to know what general relativity is in order to read this book
or be around that. You know, oddly enough, the summary for that book did not specify anything about general relativity, but it probably wouldn't hurt.
Gotcha.
And then the third book that was suggested is a little bit of a different look at things. Becoming Animal, an Earthly Cosmology by David Abram is more about how do we interact with nature and what does that tell us about the universe. And so it is a look at cosmology, but it's a slightly different angle of things.
Nice. And then we have two bonus books that didn't come up specifically in this, but that we think are great in this category. The first is God's Holy Darkness by Cherie Green and Becca Selnick and illustrated by Nikki Faison. And Reverend Nick Peñaranda was a guest of ours.
Yeah, it was
and
great.
Is Nikki Faison. And so we just love, you know, sharing our guests' stuff. Also, this book in particular really digs into the gift of darkness and the ways that darkness reflects the divine. And so the art is obviously amazing, but it's just really well done, and they have a second book in the works. So keep your ears here, because I'm sure that we will let you know when that book is coming out. Yeah. And then the other book is Tipiskawi Kissick, Night Sky Star Stories by Wilfred Buck. And these mostly come from the Cree tradition, but you can also find Wilfred Buck on YouTube and other places if want to hear the stories aloud. But this digs into mostly Cree, but more native star stories, stories about the cosmos and our place in it.
Yeah. And our second episode was on the Magi and Zoroastrianism to sort of round out our Epiphany theme for the season. And so the first book that came up while we were talking about this, I think, was my suggestion of The Gift of the Magi, which is both a short story and the name of a story collection by O. Henry, which is less about the actual Magi and more a instance of the Magi being referenced in pop culture. But it is a good story, and I did enjoy it.
Yeah. I mentioned Small Camel Follows the Star by Rachel W. N. Brown, which is an adorable story about a small camel who is part of the journey to Jesus with one of the Magi.
I'm guessing that might be a children's book?
Yes, that's a children's book. And then a graphic novel, American Born Chinese, by Jean Luen Yang, is not a story about the Magi visiting Jesus, but includes an instance of the Magi visiting Jesus within the larger story that it is telling. Disney has a first season based on these books. The Nativity doesn't come up in that first season, and I don't know if it will in subsequent seasons, but I really enjoyed the show on Disney Plus as well as the graphic novel. So those are both some really great options.
Yeah. So when I went looking for books about Zoroastrianism, a lot of the recommendations I found were from people who were not actually Zoroastrian themselves. And so eventually I wound up counting on a reading list from a website called Avesta.org, which is a website that I understand is actually put together by Zoroastrians, which is our goal. We want people to be able to talk about themselves and to hear from people's own voices. And so if you go to avesta.org/recommended.htm, you'll find the reading list there. There are a number of authors mentioned there.
And we'll link to that in the episode description.
Yes. One of the authors that is mentioned pretty consistently anywhere that I tried looking for books about Zoroastrianism is a woman named Mary Boyce, who I understand was not herself Zoroastrian, but was well respected for her study of Zoroastrianism and Zoroastrianism in history as well. Her books are getting a little outdated. I'm not entirely sure that she's still alive, actually, but her books are understood to be very solid research. And two of those books include a book called Zoroastrians. Again, lots of very creative names today. And then also, if you want to look at primary sources about Zoroastrianism, she has another book called Textual Sources for the Study of Zoroastrianism. And both of those books are on that reading list that I mentioned from the Zoroastrian website. A few of the options that are listed on that reading list are also newer than her books. And then there's another author that doesn't appear on that reading list, but seemed to be recommended pretty consistently by several people. His name is Albert de Jong. And we can link to his Wikipedia webpage, which includes his list of what he's written. He is more of an Iranian history expert, and he's written a number of articles in encyclopedias and anthologies and quite a lot of papers about Zoroastrianism in Iranian history.
Nice. Our next episode, episode 3, was on astrology with Emily Ann Garcia, and astrology looks at the stars and planets in the sky and the patterns that they form and is a way of knowing ourselves and the cosmos and our relationship with it that traces back for a very, very long time.
Yeah. And two of the books that our guest Emily Ann Garcia recommended specifically about astrology are You Were Born for This by Jenny Nicholas. And this is a very in-depth look at astrology, and she especially appreciated that the author has many shared values with this podcast and ourselves. And it's a modern look. We actually talked pretty extensively on that episode about how a lot of the stuff that was written about astrology got written down in the 70s and then put online in like the late 70s, early 80s. And so for a long time, the stuff that was free to look at on the internet was all like the same stuff. And so this is another generation kind of writing about astrology that's newer and a little less robotic sounding, you might say, about astrology. And then her other recommendation was a book called Astrology by Carol Taylor, And she especially appreciated how this one is very specific information on each sign. She really seemed to think that this one helped identify the center of what each sign was all about.
Yeah. And that one we couldn't find on Bookshop, so we'll try and find a different link to it for you all. Everything we can find on Bookshop, we will link to on Bookshop, because we like bookshop.org, and if you use our links, we might get a couple cents. But also, if we can't find it on Bookshop, then we'll try and find other links to those books for you all. And then I was curious about some other options, especially since we couldn't find astrology on bookshop.org. And so I asked friend of the podcast, Susanna Porter, and her top recommendations were Parker's Astrology, The Definitive Guide to Using Astrology in Every Aspect of Your Life by Julia and Derek Parker. And she said that this is like a very good starter, basic, this is what you use. This is the top recommendation. And then she said also Llewellyn's Complete Book of Astrology, The Easy Way to Learn Astrology by Chris Brandt Risky is another good one. And Llewellyn is like the website organization for that one.
Oh yeah, Llewellyn was basically a standard source for books on these related topics for decades. It's a fairly trusted source. If they were willing to publish it, then anything they're willing to publish was pretty solid.
Yeah. Yep. And then if you are trying to take your astrology engagement to the next level and looking at transits, so looking at what is happening now and where you line up in the world now or at certain points of time, the best one, she said, this is the one for transits, is Planets in Transit, Life Cycles for Living by Robert Hand. So that's like, if you're ready to get deep into astrology, the other ones are, here's how you get into it to start with.
Yes. Our fourth episode was called Our Solar System, and we totally on purpose, not accidentally at all, focused on the other planets in the solar system. So we did not so much talk about the sun or Earth, although we did talk a bit about the moon, and we talked about the different characteristics of all of the planets and such for that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally on purpose. It was not an accident that we forgot about them. Not at all.
No.
So, of course, the book that we mentioned during the episode and that I read most of before the episode and then finished reading after was How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming by Mike Brown. And this one is part memoir, part science history. So he's talking about both his experience of life and starting a family and all of those things and the ways that it coincided with his discovery of things in the solar system, particularly in the very outer reaches of the solar system in the Kuiper Belt and potentially the Oort cloud. And in discovering those objects, he also was a main factor for demoting Pluto to a dwarf planet instead of a regular planet. This was also the episode where we had our lovely Pluto poll, where you all got to state your opinions about whether or not Pluto was a planet, which we had a lot of fun with.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And if you want some more books that dig into the solar system, these are all books that kind of work with a variety of ages of school kid books. The first one is Sky Gazing, A Guide to the Moon, Sun, Planets, Stars, Eclipses, and Constellations by Meg Thatcher. And I know this one because I picked it out and sent it to a 3-year-old I love, who's a really good reader. So this one is a little bit more complex, but still a kid's picture book, but not like an ABC's book. And that I just thought was a great way to engage for kids and in the whole variety. And then the second book is A Few Beautiful Minutes, Experiencing a Solar Eclipse by Kate Allen Fox. And that one I specifically am naming now because we have an eclipse coming up.
Yep.
Wait, the eclipse
it will have happened
might by the have time. Already happened. Yeah, so this is like a little bit, you know, a day late, a dollar short, or a couple days late. But A Few Beautiful Minutes, Experiencing a Solar Eclipse by Kate Allen Fox is a great way to engage kids with eclipses. If you are watching the eclipse with kids, I think it would be a great follow-up book to read. And then it wouldn't be this season if we didn't get the Magic School Bus involved in some capacity. We've already mentioned the Magic School Bus once or twice, but there is a book by Joanna Cole that is The Magic School Bus Lost in the Solar System. So definitely worth checking out. We love the Magic School Bus and the ways it is creatively teaching kids about science and space and all sorts of things.
Absolutely.
And hello, and Hobbs.
Yes, our friendly guest Hobbs has joined us for the episode and would like you to know that it is definitely his nap time and we should let him sleep.
Mm-hmm. We're working on it, Hobbs.
Thankfully, he has no trouble whatsoever sleeping through my constant talking, so.
I feel like there's a lot to be said in that category, but I'm just going to jump over it. Our fifth episode dug into astrophysics with Dr. Katie Mack, which was, I tell people, it was basically like my own private lesson in astrophysics and dark matter. And then we recorded it and shared it with people. So it was a fantastic conversation and I loved it. And you can check out Katie Mack's book, The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking, which talks about the different ideas of how the whole universe might end and how likely they are, how unlikely, those sorts of things. So,
yeah. Also mentioned during that episode, in part, I think, because we were talking about various ways that everything might come to an end, was the movie Don't Look Up, which is, ultimately speaking, a movie about climate, but also about lots of other things.
Yep. And then, in order to resist my hoping that we could survive a whole, like, flipping of the ways the laws of physics work, Katie Mack suggested the research paper by Coleman and DeLuca that was published in 1980 on vacuum decay, and that just dashed those hopes of us surviving any sort of complete upheaval of the way physics works. So,
as I remember, however, I think she did specify that the end would be so fast we wouldn't even know we were gone. So if that helps.
I mean, yeah, but still.
And then our last book for episode 5, we also spoke briefly about the book On Repentance and Repair by Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, which is a fantastic look at the process of healing and reconciliation. And I would also point out, what I noticed as I read it was that while it is a great book, because it's about forgiveness and reconciliation, there are a lot of really deeply emotional stories in it. And so if you're not up for hearing about people doing a lot of deep emotional work, maybe wait until you are.
Yeah, that's real. Also, I forgot about this amazing kids book series that we are going to recommend to you also, but AB University is kind of how people talk about it. And it's from the same authors as a book we will later mention, but it's Astrophysics for Babies. Is a fantastic book. It's by Julia Kregenau and Chris Furry. And it's, they have like quantum physics for babies, neural networks for babies. The quantum physics one, I think, has like a cat that's both asleep and awake for their Schrodinger's
cat. Is the cat's name Schrodinger?
Cat. I think so. I'm not 100% positive, but it is the Schrodinger's cat. So it's a fantastic, cute thing. They're board books, so that's kind of the age range of them. But definitely check them out if you're interested.
Episode 6 was about astronomers throughout history, and I want to apologize again that we did not remember to put Hypatia, the librarian of Alexandria, in this episode. She wound up getting mentioned in the following episode instead, but we were kind of so excited about getting to start talking about Annie Jump Cannon and the various early astronomers at Harvard that we kind of skipped past the concept of the ancient Greeks. And so we talked about quite a few astronomers in this episode.
Mm-hmm. And one of those astronomers that we talked about was Priyamvada Natarajan, and she wrote Mapping the Heavens, the Radical Scientific Ideas That Reveal the Cosmos. And it is a fantastic book. It's kind of a survey of important scientific ideas and discoveries regarding the cosmos. So if you are like, this is all interesting, all of it's interesting, this is a great book to dig deeper into a little bit of everything connected to the cosmos and kind of get a greater sense from that.
And later on in the episode, we talked about various fictional depictions of astronomers, and one of my favorite examples is from the novel The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison, who includes the main character's half-sister, is an astronomer in her own right, and she is a fairly major-minor character, I guess you would put it. She shows up several times, and her interest in astronomy is very consistent. So.
And then, of course, we mentioned Hidden Figures, which is a well-known book, and we did our Patreon movie commentary on that in February, so you can check that out if you are a Patreon supporter, or if you're not a Patreon supporter, you can become a Patreon supporter. It starts at just $5 a month, which is cheaper than, honestly, most of the books on our list, if not all of them.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Hidden Figures is not only a movie, but it is a book, and there's actually two different books. There's a kid's book and an adult book, so depending on what age range you are looking at for it, you can definitely check out both, and both are listed on our bookshop list for that. Also, Julia Kregenau, who is one of the authors for Astrophysics for Babies, is also an astronomer and was not listed in the episode, but shout out to her because she's got a bunch of books, including Astrophysics for Babies, that are out there to help not only babies, but also their grown-ups learn a little bit more about science. And our bonus book for this is The Black Hole Survival Guide by Yana Levin, and the artwork is by Leah Halloran. It's a very small and short book with artwork in it that kind of digs into black holes with the goal of making the science and the understandings around black holes more accessible. So,
okay, cool.
It's lovely. It's a lovely book and a great one to read by an astrophysicist, which is kind of like an astronomer. So that's why it's a bonus.
Yeah.
And then in episode 7, we figured we should also include some male astronomers because we wouldn't want, you know, males to feel left out and stuff. And so we talked about, again, Mike Brown and How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming is one of the books from that. But a lot of the male astronomers that we talked about were more prevalent in antiquity. They just haven't been able to keep up with astronomers these days.
Although, to give him credit, I have to say, I don't know if Mike Brown was the one to come up with that book title, but How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming, that is a great book title.
It is. It is a great book title, yeah. But yeah, so there's not as many, you know, published works from male astronomers these days.
The percentages have definitely changed, yes. And then, speaking of male astronomers, Carl Sagan came up a couple of times, although he really did a lot of work in helping to translate science for the ordinary, less educated person. And a novel that he wrote, which also became a movie, is called Contact. And the main character is Ellie Arroway, an astronomer who is part of the process of making contact with alien life. Although that gets kind of interesting in the process. Yeah. And then our 8th episode was Geography and Celestial Navigation, where we talked about the various ways that humans have used the stars to find our way around the world over the centuries.
And shout out to Moana, which was our movie commentary for January for our Patreon supporters, because that is all about celestial navigation at sea. And if you want to know more, particularly about sea celestial navigation, the book Celestial Navigation, A Complete Home Study Course, second edition, by David Birch, is a trusted guide for navigating without electricity while at sea, and has been published for over 30 years. So this has a lot of both deep knowledge and staying knowledge, knowledge that is still dependable today.
Yeah.
And then the other book is Celestial Navigation for Yachtsmen, the 13th edition by Mary Blewett. And this is another trusted how-to guide that's been published for over 60 years. So both of those go back pretty far, and it makes sense because navigating without electricity wouldn't change with the
I would think
proliferation
not.
Of electricity. Yeah.
I suppose one change might be that you're probably not using a slide rule as often, but aside from that.
Fair. I mean, and also, you know, knowing what is the moon and what is a city. Like,
that's true.
Know those things, but baby turtles don't.
Or for that matter, a space station.
That one is important and trickier.
And then for navigating on land, two books I found were Be Expert with Map and Compass by Bjorn Shellstrom, which his last name starts with a K. And this is all about navigation without GPS, or possibly with GPS as a backup. I do want to specify this book is only about finding your way around, orienteering, that kind of thing. It is not about, like, hiking or survival or anything like that. If you want a more overall guide that includes navigation but also talks about hiking safety and things like that, of course, The Scouting Guide to Hiking, a officially licensed book of the Boy Scouts of America, is available in many places. And that covers not just navigation, but also several other aspects of hiking.
Mm-hmm. And if you want just a lovely, fun, delightful kids picture book, Meet Me at the Moon by Gianna Marino is a kids book about an elephant baby and an elephant mama, and the mama has to leave and do a thing and then says to the baby, meet me at the moon. And so the baby is, you know, navigating celestially with the moon. And I won't give you spoilers, but it's a kid's book, so you can guess what kind of an ending it will probably have. It's a really cute book, and I love it. I saw it one time and bought it, because elephants, but then also moon navigation. And then our ninth episode was Space Travel in Pop Culture with Jeremy Cobb of the Three Black Halflings podcast, and this was fun, and we came up with so much. The list is long for this one, because there is so much space travel throughout pop culture, and this list is just a glimpse, right? It's not including any of the novelizations of Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, any of those big ones. We're talking more non-those ones, I guess. Not quite as mainstream or prolific. And one of the things to mention also is, of course, that the band Queen had an astrophysicist in it. And so the song 39 is a great song if you want some, you know, space science nerdiness for yourself.
Absolutely. We also talked about the Animorphs book series, which involves the use of what's called Z-Space in the series, which is basically where the kids' bodies go when they turn into animals. And so it's sort of like they're traveling through a wormhole without really realizing it. And Jeremy also brought up the Kingdom Hearts video game, in which you can play several different Disney characters while exploring a world.
Which just sounds like a lot of fun, and I still need to, like, get into that.
Oh, yeah.
Also, we mentioned A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle, and the variety of books that she wrote are fantastic. The newer movie, A Wrinkle in Time, is also just spectacular, and I loved the adaptation of the book into that movie, and the ways that they engaged with it on a new level was just great. I loved it, and highly recommend it. And then we also talked about 2001, A Space Odyssey. The book is by Arthur C. Clarke, and there's also a movie that was made from it, but that is a great sci-fi, what does it look like in the future? Mm-hmm. Even though that's over 20 years in the past now.
Yeah.
That's how we're weird. Yep. And then we also talked about The Story of Us by Ted Chiang was made into the movie The Arrival, and it's part of a collection of short stories called Stories of Your Life and Others, and it is fantastic. I love the short story. I love the movie. It's one of those that you can actually love both, which I think is somewhat rare these days, but I really like how they adapted it and the original.
Yeah. Jeremy also recommended a YouTuber named Kyle Cauldron, who is part of the Frankfurt School and examines various themes in media and how they are used, particularly in regards to how does media interact with fascism, was part of what we were talking about. And also mentioned the interesting methods of space travel in the series Neon Genesis Evangelion, which was a extremely popular anime series for several years. And it sounds wonderful, and also sounds like there's kind of a huge necessary investment of time and energy in order to understand what's really going on. It is a gigantic canon.
Yeah. Neon Genesis Evangelion is by Yoshiyuki Sadamoto, if you're looking it up. And then we also talked about Iron Widow by Shiran J. Zhao. And I love this book. It's the first in a series, and it really digs into Chinese culture in a really cool way as a sci-fi book, and is a reimagining of the rise of China's first and only female emperor, Wu Zetian. And it is fantastic. I listened to it on audiobook. I love it. It is great.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about generational ships, and Homegoing by Ya Gyasi is not about a generational ship, but it is a generational book. So each chapter covers a different generation, and it starts with two half-sisters, one of whom is kidnapped and sold into slavery, and the other of whom is not, and how those generations experience life all the way up until a present-ish time period.
Yeah. Another book that we mentioned was The Martian by Andy Weir, which I had a little bit of a mini theme going on for myself during this series of the many and different ways that space can try to kill you. And The Martian gives you a whole new option of being stranded on another planet. And so it is a very fascinating and a good read of an astronaut being stranded on Mars and his ultimate survival. That was quite the struggle. And that was also turned into a movie that I hear is also really excellent.
Mm-hmm. I've only seen the movie. I have not read the book. And I like the movie, yeah. So yeah.
I really like the book. I will probably get around to seeing the movie at some point. I'm just not watching a lot of movies right now. And Jeremy also mentioned some of the episodes that he and Three Black Halflings did using the system Paradox Perfect, which is a game system that allows you to sort of mess with time travel. And two of the series he mentioned were, one was called Beautiful Nonsense, which includes a look at the Heavenly Throne and the Book of Revelation. That was really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And not terribly done.
Yeah, no, it was very well done. And how it could be misused by a super technological theocracy kind of place. And then, of course, he also mentioned the Crisis on Infinite Costners, where he and the other players all played different aspects of Kevin Costner, which was pretty hilarious as well. And then finally, we wound up talking about playing a Muppet in D&D, because we are nerds at church and we love Muppets, and of course it's Jeremy Cobb, so of course we're going to talk about D&D. And he reminded us that the Pathfinder system, a D&D alternative, does actually have a race that allows you to basically play not exactly a Muppet, but like a character made out of cloth and stuffing. And they are called Stufflins, and I thought that was fabulous.
Yes, for sure.
And then our final episode for this season was, besides this episode obviously, was episode number 10 on space programs and their history, with Reverend Kristen Rice, who is the chaplain of Purdue University, which is also known as the Cradle of Astronauts because of how many astronauts they have sent into space. Mm-hmm. And the book that Kristen and I both kind of got started on our fascination with space with is called Lost Moon by Jim Lovell, the commanding officer of the Apollo 13 mission. And the paperback or newer versions of this book are now titled Apollo 13, and they are by James Lovell and Jeffrey Kluger, who I think added some things to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so either way, you'll get that same book.
Yeah.
But the one that we're linking to, because it's the one that is accessible on bookshop.org, is Apollo 13. So,
sure.
Yeah. And then other books that also kind of cover that are A Man on the Moon by Andrew Chaikin, which covers all of the Apollo missions. So it kind of takes each Apollo mission and talks about what they were and what they did. And then Moonshot, the inside story of America's Apollo moon landings, is a great book, and there's actually two versions of it. So Alan Shepard and Deke Slayton talk about the missions to the moon from their perspectives as the astronauts. And then Moonshot with an exclamation point is From Blast Off to Splashdown, right along with Neil, Buzz, and Michael on the journey and adventure of a lifetime. So that one's by Charles McEachern. I'm not 100% positive on the last name pronunciation, sorry about that. But that is a kid's book about the moon missions. And so if you want it from a little bit of a more kid perspective, that's a great option.
Yeah. Another book that both Kristen and I enjoyed was called October Sky, which tells the story of a young man in a impoverished situation who eventually goes on to become a NASA engineer. And it's a really interesting look at how much work goes into becoming a NASA engineer, basically. Mm-hmm. He really has to fight to be able to take calculus and so on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, as we were going through the various things that we loved at the end of the episode, one of the things that came up was the movie Armageddon, which, you know, it's not about the science exactly, but it is a very fun movie and certainly does enjoy its relationship with NASA. Mm-hmm. And so that is a good time. And Kristen also mentioned a miniseries called In the Shadow of the Moon, which is all about the process of actually going to the moon and what that involved. It's a very detailed look and includes many interviews of the people who have actually visited the moon.
Nice. And then Kristen also mentioned Valentina Tereshkova, who was one of the first astronauts to go up. I believe they were called cosmonauts at the time by the USSR. And so she was one of the first cosmonauts to go into space because Russia did not have all of the sexism that the U.S. had in figuring out who was best qualified to go into space.
Which is not to say that they were without sexism. Like, let's
It just was not blatantly creating rules that would prevent women from going into space. And so there's a great book, Valentina Tereshkova, In Her Own Words, The First Lady of Space, that talks about her life and her work as a cosmonaut in the USSR, now Russia. And then we have a couple other just, like, books that didn't quite fit in an episode per se, but are books we highly recommend. So I will recommend The ABCs of Space by Chris Furry and Julia Cregano, PhD. And one of the things that I love, it's a board book, but one of the things that I love about it is created to grow with kids. So the book has three different levels. So you have the level one, right? A is for asteroid. But then you also have level two. An asteroid is a big chunk of rock that orbits the sun. So for when you're starting to, like, understand things more. And then you have level three, where it's more detailed, and it says, asteroids are called minor planets because they move around the sun like planets, but are smaller and oddly shaped. There are millions of known asteroids, and probably many more even smaller ones. Most of these are between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. It is a book that will grow with kids, or that us as adults can read and get deeper into, you know, Q is for quasar, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's nice to read something that doesn't feel, you know, threatening to your intelligence. And I have a few books I wanted to mention. Okay, to be entirely honest, I have tried to finish Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time several times, and I have just never gotten there. It's honestly not that long of a book. I don't know if it's his writing or what. I know a lot of people who really love that book, so it might just be me, that's fair. But eventually, I tried the book The Black Hole War, My Battle with Stephen Hawking to Make the World Safe for Quantum Mechanics by Leonard Susskind, which is at least, I think, four times longer than The Brief History of Time. It's enormous. And it's, to be entirely honest with you, I didn't actually finish that one either, although I got pretty close. But it is a really impressively readable and interesting book about how his understanding of quantum mechanics differs from that of Stephen Hawking and the points on which they disagree and, well, his explanations of why he's right. But it was very well written and I very much enjoyed it. And then there's a handful of other books that are kind of related that I thought I should mention. Two are called Physics for Future Presidents, which is by Richard Muller. And also The Physics of Star Trek by Lawrence Krauss. Both of them were very fun. The Physics for Future Presidents is literally trying to explain basic physics concepts that a state official who doesn't have a science background might have to understand. The very first chapter is on why did the World Trade Center towers collapse after they were hit by the airplanes on 9/11. Ooh. And how the explosions melted the I-beams, basically. And then each chapter is on a different physics concept and how it might apply to someone who was in an official position. And so I just really liked the concept of writing a book for someone who wants to be president one day. I thought that was great. And of course, The Physics of Star Trek, I was fascinated by that title immediately. And that does go into stuff like teleportation and a little bit of time travel as well, but mostly it's focused on space travel. And that was a lot of fun, too. There's also another book called The Physics of the Impossible. I'm probably going to pronounce the author's name wrong, Michio Kaku. But this was a little bit more out there, you might say, especially because it didn't have the excuse of being about Star Trek. But this book goes into a lot of more expansive physics conversations about things like time travel and teleportation and a few other things, the more unlikely space travel options. And it is very readable. And then finally, the book Rise of the Rocket Girls by Nathalia Holt is still on my to-read list, but it does look fantastic. It's a look at women in the space programs and how they have helped us get to the stars.
Nice.
Yeah. And then, since we are nerds at church, we should talk about some Bible readings.
Speaking of which, also the Bible. It fits with the cosmologies. We've been talking about that. We should probably name that.
Yes, the Bible comes up in all of our episodes.
Yeah, the Bible comes up in all of our episodes in a variety of capacities. And if we have missed a way that you're like, why didn't you talk about this passage in the Bible? It relates a bunch. Let us know. And maybe we'll do a mini-sode of all the verses we missed.
Absolutely. Also, we should probably have a Bible on our bookshop reading list, don't you think?
We definitely have the Jewish Annotated New Testament on our reading list. But yeah, I think especially now that they've come out with an updated version to the NRSV and an inclusive Bible.
We can throw one on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our first reading for this episode is from the book of Job, chapter 19, verses 23 to 25. And in this passage, Job is hoping that his words will be written down and kept for generations.
So in verse 23, we read, "Oh, that my words were written down. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book." And this is one of the joys of oral traditions that get written down. Look, your words are written down, Job. They are in a book. And these days, basically anybody could have their words written down and put into a book. And that doesn't mean that it's good, but there are a lot of books that are good. So yeah, yay books.
Absolutely.
I love books. Also, there's like a whole bookbinding thing on TikTok that is fantastic that I love. So, you know, that too.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I would imagine there are probably some YouTube videos on that too. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then in verse 24, we read, "Oh, that with an iron pen and with lead they were engraved on a rock forever." And humans have imagined a lot of ways that words could last a long time. I believe I mentioned the video game Horizon Zero Dawn during our ninth episode with Jeremy Cobb from Three Black Halflings. And in that video game, there are a series of messages that you can find that are left from a previous civilization. I won't go into detail about that. But those messages are recorded on technology that was designed to last 50,000 years on specialized computer chips that were designed to last a long time, basically. And I thought that was a fascinating way to make sure that your words would last, maybe not quite forever, but certainly about as long as a rock might last.
Yeah.
Depending on where it was.
Nice. And then our other passage for this episode, we figured to kind of bookend our Epiphany season, we would return to the Magi. And so we have Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 15. "The Magi follow the signs in the sky to encounter Jesus, encountering another ruler along the way." And as I was reading in verse 2, we read, "The Magi asked in Jerusalem, 'Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage.'" And thanks to this season, there are so many new understandings of what it could mean to have observed his star at its rising, from astrological appearances of Venus in the house of Pisces to the wisdom of ancient cosmologies, Zoroastrian texts, and modes of celestial navigation. And I love that. And I love the ways that it also reminds me that there are many ways of being called or finding our purpose today. And there's an internal sense, there's a loved one's suggestion, there's reading and resonating with a book, or going on a retreat, or hearing a sermon, or so many different things that help us navigate the world around us, not just in a physical sense, but also in a spiritual and emotional sense. So that was cool.
Yeah. And then in verse 10, we read, "When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy." And a few different times this season, we've talked about how there's sort of an echo of the story of Jericho's walls and the stopping of the sun here, with the star stopping over the stable. And we talked about a lot of different theories about what that star might be, as you just mentioned. I don't remember if one of the options we brought up was that maybe the star was an alien satellite that could move and stop and had the ability to do that. So maybe it wasn't actually God stopping the planet from rotating. Maybe it was just that it probably would have been easier for God to have an alien civilization send a satellite to go investigate us than to stop the whole solar system from moving for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they stopped the whole solar system or if it was just the star, but that's a new theory.
Sure.
And I'm intrigued. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now for our Muppets moment. So our question for this episode is, which Muppet should narrate the audiobook for which book on this list that we have created? So, okay.
And we're certainly not doing all of the books, oh my goodness.
Oh, no, nor all of the Muppets. Do you have one, okay?
Yeah, so you were kind enough to go out and look for a bunch of children's books. And, you know, if you're looking for books that don't often already have audiobooks, actually, children's books are often left out of that aspect of things, which is unfair to people who prefer audiobooks. Even if they are younger, that might come in handy for them. And if a Muppet was going to do a series of audiobooks of books about space for children, I have to say, I think Fozzie would be excellent. He is really good at slowing down and making sure that people can understand him, and also when he does his comedic performances, he really cares about connecting with his audience, and I can see how that would be super important for doing books on space for children. And so I think he would be great at it.
That's a really great idea. I was trying to think of who I would want to do it, and it's just hard. But
well, yeah,
I was thinking of Miss Piggy for Valentina Tereshkova's...
Oh, yes.
The First Woman in Space, because I think there's just something beautiful and there's just breakthrough stuff that happens when you get Miss Piggy as one of the few women who is a Muppet narrating.
Absolutely.
About the First Woman in Space. Yeah, that was really cool. I think that Rolf would also be a good kids book one, because he could make it so musical and even put it to music. So
absolutely,
that was the other one I was thinking of.
Yeah. Oh, and now that I think of it, I was reminded of the tone of the book when I shared it with you, The Black Hole War, My Battle with Stephen Hawking to Make the World Safe for Quantum Mechanics by Leonard Susskind. Mm-hmm. I think that the attitude of the book is kind of given away by the title. He is very clear that this is him arguing with Stephen Hawking, and he is right, which is fine. And I'm sure, you know, the argument continues today, as far as I'm aware. I think that Sam Eagle would probably have so much fun doing a audiobook of someone making that argument.
Interesting.
And when we talk about Sam Eagle, we don't talk about letting him have fun very often. And so I think that's something he would enjoy. And also, he comes across as a fairly educated Muppet, so I think he'd be able to, like, figure out the pronunciation and everything of all the difficult scientific words.
That's awesome. I thought you were going to say Statler and Waldorf,
because I think... You know, maybe...
Because I haven't read the book, right? And so,
maybe they're offering some side commentary throughout.
Well, side commentary, but also, like, I haven't read the book, so I was picturing, in my head, both Stephen Hawking and...
Leonard Susskind.
Both Stephen Hawking and Leonard Susskind, like...
The two of them, sure.
It's just by Leonard Susskind, but I was imagining him, like, having... This is what Stephen Hawking says, and this is what I think. And so having those narrations of their different arguments, where one is Statler and one is Waldorf, or the side commentary would also be good, yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Our theme music was by Rachel Meyer Lachlan, and Muppets music was by Brenda Boss, and our seasonal artwork was by Pace Warfield. Catch us next time when we'll dive into Superhero Spectacular, our fifth season examining superheroes in the world, in the Bible, and in pop culture. This podcast has been produced by us, Kay Roloff and Emily Ewing. For more fun, check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and Blue Sky at Nerds at Church, or contact us at nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
And if you are thinking about contacting us, or if you have opinions on which superheroes, real, imagined, biblical, whatever, you want us to cover, let us know. We have some ideas, but we haven't fleshed out the total season yet, and we would love your opinions and your...
Absolutely.
Your hopes and dreams for this next season. And we will be taking a break between this episode and starting our fifth season. We might do a mini-sode, because we usually do a mini-sode between seasons, but we don't have an idea for the mini-sode yet. So if you have an idea, let us know. Or if you have opinions on the books that we missed or any of that stuff, we can always incorporate that into a new mini-sode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if you like what you've heard, rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you want access to our uncut guest episodes, merch discounts, movie commentaries, and more, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsatchurch. Starting at just $5 per month, it is much cheaper than hiring a Muppet to record your audiobook.
Of course, they deserve a living wage. But yes,
that is true. That's why it's much cheaper.
Also, let us know on Blue Sky, Facebook, or Twitter, which Muppet would you want to do the audiobook for any of the books on our list today?
As the ancient Christian said, Pax Vobiscum.